The Joyride.
OFM, the sound of your life. It is Wednesday afternoon, and as always, we are so privileged to have Jen Thorpe with us, talking all things adult. She's the author of Adulting 101 and how we can survive the grown-up world in the crazy times that we live in. Jen Thorpe, once again, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Nico. Always a pleasure to be here with you.
This is going to be our last session, and we need to cram in as much as we can today. It's been such a pleasure chatting with you, and our audience has responded quite phenomenally as well. I think a lot of these things that we talk about are stuff that we know we should be doing, but it's like school. You know, sometimes you just need someone to reiterate them and bring them to the front of your mind.
Sometimes we all need a reminder to do a bit better, hey?
Definitely. You seem like a person that has a good balance when it comes to work and life. Today I want to chat a little bit about especially things that we take for granted as young adults and people entering into the real world, is when we go looking for something simple like a job and you go for an interview. One thing I liked about one of the opening lines when you touch on this subject is questions that they can't ask you. Can you quickly touch on that for us?
Yeah, so there's a number of questions that it's not legal for anyone to ask you in an interview, thanks to our labor law, which includes the Employment Equity Act, which prohibits anyone from basing the decision to hire or not to hire you on categories that are prohibited discrimination. So that sounds very complicated. What it means is if you can't discriminate against someone based on their age, gender, sexual orientation, or any of the other categories defined in the Constitution, you can't give someone a job or not give someone a job based on those categories. So in an interview, it's not okay for someone to ask you, for example, if you plan on having kids in the future, what your personal finance situation looks like. It's not okay for them to ask you about sex or your relationships, or to say something like, you look super healthy, you don't have any medical conditions, do you know about? So when you look at the Constitution, that's a good guide of things that people aren't allowed to ask you, because you're not allowed to discriminate on any of those grounds.
So when we look at South Africa's labor law, it's quite an extensive piece of legislation, and it's something that protects employees quite extensively. Mm-hmm. What are the things that we sometimes forget when it comes to our labor law that we need to be aware of?
Sheesh, well, we're really lucky in South Africa to have fantastic labor law. I think the ones that I mentioned in the book are the Labor Relations Act and the Basic Conditions of Employment Act and the Employment Equity Act. So those three laws read together mean that we are really protected. If you look at other countries in the world, we're very lucky. So things that I think you should probably keep in mind that you might forget are things about unfair discrimination, so what we've just touched on. If you feel like someone is treating you poorly at work because they're discriminating against you, you have absolutely every right to question it. And some other things that I think especially when we're starting out, we don't ask about are things like working on public holidays or weekends and how they're paid. The law actually says how people have to pay you, so I recommend checking that out. And also in terms of, you know, I'm someone who's just had a baby, so I'm thinking about pregnancy. The law protects your right to have a break if you're pregnant and when you give birth to your child. Employers don't necessarily have to pay you for maternity leave, but they do have to provide you with it. One important thing I think that applies to all workplaces is that an employer can't create a rule at work that is contrary to the law. So your employer can't say, I know you're supposed to pay people if they come to work on a public holiday, but we've decided as a company we're not going to do that. They're not allowed to do that. That's illegal. So as long as you know your rights as a worker in terms of those three laws that I mentioned, you'll protect yourself really well.
And if your rights are violated, what can you do?
You can go to the CCMA, which is the Commission on Conciliation, Mediation and Arbitration. They will base their decision on the law, what the law says in terms of your rights. And they will also make sure that you're given a fair hearing, and that if there's been an infringement, you will get a ruling that is in your favor. So obviously it depends on how the case goes and what information is presented, but they are there as a right for you. You can also, obviously, if you feel like that's a matter of discrimination, you can go to the Equality Courts or to one of our South African Chapter 9 institutions who can give you advice on what to do going forward.
And one thing you talk about in this section is when you go for an interview, and the company doesn't actually divulge the pay that goes along with the job, that's a red flag to look out for, in your opinion. Why do you say that?
Yeah, I think there's many corporates who would disagree with me, and I'm willing to have the debate. But I, in my view, when you advertise a job and you don't advertise the salary, what you're saying is we don't actually know how much we want to pay someone for this position. You're hoping that someone might apply and ask you for less than what you're willing to pay. And we know that when companies keep pay secret, it results in discriminatory pay. So it increases the risk of a gender pay gap. It increases the risk of a race pay gap. Because if people aren't allowed, or if people don't openly talk about their salaries, it means that they're able to one up one another in negotiations. So that might be fine if you're in a cutthroat corporate industry and that's what you're interested in. But I'm interested in a workplace where people are paid according to the job that they're doing, not according to who they are. If you don't think someone has the skills or the capacity to do a job, then you shouldn't hire them. So it shouldn't be something that you pay them less to do because they're actually not perfect for the job. You should hire the people who are right for the job and pay them appropriately. But again, disclaimer, that is my honest opinion. I'm willing to have the debate with anyone who wants to have it.
No, I agree with you because, I mean, at the end of the day, if you as a company are willing to look at how much you can get away with, how much how many other things are you going to try to get away with when it comes to my personal time, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, and I also don't think that it's fair, for instance, if a company is looking to hire someone and they're looking to poach someone, say, for another company, that they would offer that person more than what their current employees are being paid, because I really do believe if you're doing the same job as someone else, you should be paid the equivalent of what they're being paid.
You talk about boundaries in the workplace as new employees. And the first thing that you talk about, you mentioned three things that you need to look out for. But the first one is when people advertise jobs that use words like fast-paced. You run away from those. And take us through your three boundaries that you look out for when applying for a job.
So firstly, when I see a job advert that says fast-paced or willing to adapt to long hours or things like that, I absolutely say no. I think we are all often put ourselves under unhealthy pressure to perform at work at the expense of our health and our relationships. So fast-paced in the advert means to me that company doesn't actually know how to plan and prioritize their work and people are running around like headless chickens. So the second is I don't sacrifice rest for my job, which means that if your company is saying in the advert, we'll be expected to work long hours on weekends, etc., that's not something that's appealing to me. I mean, maybe if you hate weekends and you don't enjoy rest, you might be keen, but I do think it's really bad for us not to have a separation between work and life. And it's important to rest on the weekend for all the reasons we talked about in our very first chat together. And then just one interesting thing is that in many other languages, there's words for death as a result of lack of rest, and keeping on working at the expense of your rest is really dangerous. And then finally, which I think many people have commented on, you know, when they've received it from me or when they've read about this in the book, is I have a very strict email policy, which means I don't respond to emails at all hours of the day, 24/7. I have a policy that says I check my emails from Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 12 noon. And that's not saying I'm not working at any other time than that. It just means if you've got something urgent and you need me to respond to it, you should give me a call. If it's on an email, then I have the right to decide when it's convenient for me to read my emails and respond to them. And now as a freelancer and as a working mum who's just going back to work, I'm not working Mondays and Fridays because I have to negotiate my work-life boundaries, and it says that in my email. What this does is it gives a person receiving it permission not to feel so urgent, and if it is urgent, to call me. And I think that helps us all take care of ourselves a little bit better.
As an established author and a mom now, you kind of run your own business and you do freelancing on the side. Young people and people that are just starting out in life that are thinking, I'm going to start my own business versus freelancing versus getting a job. You got any tips for us?
Well, in the book, I cover starting a side hustle, starting your own business, and some things you need to think about when freelancing. So I can't be prescriptive on which would be right for you. But my tips would be, number one, know your rights in terms of the law. So even if you're setting out to work for yourself, you don't want to be exploited. So you want to make sure that people are paying you on time, things like that. If you're wanting to start a side hustle, for example, you're doing your work and you want to try find something creative to do, or you want to grow mushrooms in your spare time, then I think what's important to know is you need to allocate your time effectively. So you don't want to be burning yourself out trying to burn the candle at both ends. And then my final thing in terms of starting your own business is, and I spoke to Liz Fletcher and Sarah Gurney, who run Pomegranate, and they give five things you should consider before starting a research. And they said, do your research to make sure what's on offer in your sector, figure out what makes you different from other businesses. Take into account your personal life to make sure that you have the capacity and the finances to do so. Make sure that you believe in yourself and what you want to do, and see whether you're an entrepreneur. And sometimes the only way you'll know is if you try. And I think one important thing in all parts of adulting is that failure isn't the end. It's where you start your learning. So if you try something and it doesn't work out straight away, that's fine. What did you learn from it, and how can you do better next time?
And you just spoke about making sure that you are financially in a good place. Near to the end of the book, you start talking about saving, investing, and then looking after your retirement. How important are these things in being a holistic adult, if I can put it that way?
I think they're critical. And I think when we're earning very little, as you do when you're first starting out working, it seems impossible to save. And in some instances, absolutely is. I'm not denying the socioeconomic realities of our country. But the thing that you need to understand about money that Sam Beck-Bessinger, you know, lays out really nicely in my interview with her in the book, is that the powerful thing about money is time. So if you save a little bit every month for the rest of your life, that money will grow and grow over time. And there's nothing that can beat that. The sooner you start saving for your retirement, the better. If it's 50 Rand a month, if that's what you can afford, great, start doing that now. So I do think it's vital that we start saving a little bit of our money. There's useful calculators on the internet that can help you with how much you need to save for your retirement. I mentioned 10X in the book, and I think Sam mentions another one that I would have to look for, which I can't find now. But there's many online calculators that can work you, if you work out for you, if you want to earn this much when you retired and get this much out at the end of the day, this is how much you need to be saving now. So it's all maths. It's really about how much time your money has to grow. So if you plant those money seeds now, you'll get a very big tree at the end.
And maybe getting a good knowledge of Excel might help you a little bit as well. So when we've looked at all these things now, we've looked at work-life balance, we've looked at relationships, we've looked at finances, we've looked at the workplace and how to actually approach it. But with all these things being said and done, Murphy is inevitable, and anything that can happen probably will happen, and we do hit crises in our lives at certain points. And what's the best way to approach a crisis in your life when you're faced with one?
I think it's tough because I speak about a few in the book. I speak about climate change, crime, and misinformation and fake news. And I truly believe that those are three of the big crises that we face in South Africa on the day to day. And one of the things that you need to do first is, you know, when you get on an airplane, they say put on your own oxygen mask first before assisting anyone else. So if you face a crisis, are you doing those basic things like sleeping well, eating well, resting well, breathing well, to make sure that you are able to handle it emotionally? And if you're not able to take care of yourself first, maybe you need to take a step back. That can be difficult when we are really concerned about the way that the world is going. So that would be my real adulting tip, is take care of you as a starting point. When it comes to big issues like climate change and crime, there are laws that can help us navigate the criminal justice system, for example. And when it comes to climate change, there are small steps that we can take, which include asking the government to do better, changing the way we eat, travel, and have babies, looking at the way we wire our houses and the water that we use. So we know reduce, reuse, recycle. We often don't reduce. So that's the number one thing. And then when it comes to misinformation and fake news, I think you wanted to chat a bit more about it, but that's a really serious thing, because if we don't all have an agreed upon reality, which is based on fact and truth, it can be really hard to move forward. We saw that, you know, for example, in Trump's America, where there's such strong opposing views, and it's hard to assess what's true when everybody's only getting a certain news feed on Facebook.
The problem that I've seen as well is when you start having this argument and you have different opposing views on things, many times the opposing side will have evidence and they'll claim that they've researched this. And how do you dispute that when they truly believe that their evidence is grounded in fact?
Yeah, so it is tricky. I mean, that's why people are employed to help us do this. So my number one tip would be to visit Africa Check, which is a South African fact-checking organization who can check the information that you have. So there's things that we need to do that make sure that we're in the right first, which include checking our own biases, making sure that we are reading things. So don't just see a headline and assume that the headline is true. Read the article, click the links that it says it's basing itself on to make sure that you understand things properly. And I think it's also important to know that there's sometimes we're getting the wrong information because it's been deliberate. Our attention is for sale. We spend too much time on the computer reading things that other people share with us. And people are deliberately trying to confuse us. So it requires a little bit more effort these days to make sure that we understand the things we think we understand, which is really hard to believe from people who grew up in the era of like the Encyclopedia Britannica, where the facts are the facts.
Yeah.
But that's how it is these days.
So unfortunately, we might not always know 100% whether things that we read are real or not. I think at the end of the day, it is when you think you know, then you still don't know enough. Read more and read more and get your own encyclopedia inside your head with knowledge that you can then use to filter through things, I think.
Definitely. And obviously there's reliable sources and unreliable sources. If your information is based on something forwarded from your auntie, you might want to go and see if there's any further reading on the internet, or if your uncle loves to forward you things that make you feel afraid, for example, like, oh, this happened in my neighborhood. Can you check in the news if it's true, or go, you know, talk to your police station about what's the common crimes happening, so that you don't develop this sense that the world is falling apart when it might not be.
Any last words from all the people that have taken in the knowledge, that have tried to be better adults? Any last tips?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could tell you that from here on out it would be easy. I wish I knew all of the answers myself. I think everybody does. It's all about learning, failing, trying again, and making sure that you take a little bit of kindness into everything that you do. I think that's, I say at the end, you know, key to being an adult are humility and admitting that we don't always have all the answers. And that takes the pressure off of us. If we don't have to know everything, we can always learn and try a bit better next time.
Jen Thorpe, it has been an absolute wonderful pleasure chatting to you the last couple of weeks, and we wish you all the best. And hopefully we can be better adults thanks to you.
Oh, thanks so much, Nico. It's been fantastic talking with you.
You can find Jen Thorpe's book, Adulting 101, How to Survive the Real World, at all good bookstores.
The Joyride with Nico, Nikki, Aaron, and JB. On OFM. Proudly made possible by Arinel Pharmacy Group. Family values. Values for the whole family.